So when I first learned transcendental meditation, I signed a contract, some sort of waiver. No, not a waiver. It was a contract. Was it a non-disclosure agreement? I don't know. But there's certainly things you're not allowed to say about transcendental meditation. However, I'm going to say quite a bit. I think in the age of the internet, where you can basically find information about literally everything online, including like video of the inside of the Mormon temple, we're probably good to chat about it. But still, I guess I should be a little careful. This is Get Well Sooner. I'm Sarah, and today we're going to chat with my old friend Zane. Zane is the chillest dude. He was this sweet little angel that I used to work with at a coffee shop downtown. He was so nice to me when I was going through such a hard time. He's somebody who learned transcendental meditation when he was 5. So you're going to hear about that and you'll hear about his experiences. But first I wanted to just go over in general, like what transcendental meditation is, because I don't think we really even get into that too much, what it is. And I found that when I was trying it for the first time and trying to figure out, you know, if I should do it or not, I got pretty confused because there's a lot of different information out there about it. And actually, if you do a quick Google search today, the Wikipedia page is pretty good. I went on the Wayback Machine to check what the Wikipedia page said in 2010 about transcendental meditation, and I'm still trying to figure out if I read that or not. Like, did I read that Wikipedia page? Did I just like Google transcendental meditation and then click on the first thing, which is the ad from tm.org? I don't know. I'm not sure. But all I know was that I was very confused when I started, but I was, you know, I was encouraged by both my chill friend Zane and also the comedian Pete Holmes. At the time, I was listening to his podcast a bunch. You Made It Weird with Pete Holmes. And he was going through some stuff as well, and he was learning transcendental meditation as celebrities do. And so here's the deal. Transcendental meditation, which is called TM by the people who do it, is just like a technique where you say a meaningless word over and over again instead of, say, concentrating on your breath or your nose or something else like that. And you are meditating, so you're sort of like, it's mindfulness, it's meditation. If you haven't done meditation or mindfulness before, like, there's a lot of great apps where you can try. Headspace. This is not an ad for Headspace. I don't get paid. But I think that's a pretty good one to start with. And so this whole thing that if you Google it, you'll find like stuff about it being a cult. You'll find some pretty wild things out there. Really is just that. A mantra that you get that is nonsense words, or at least that's what they tell you, that you repeat over and over. So I think it should work with like literally any nonsense words, therefore. I guess it's easier if someone else chooses the nonsense words for you, because then like you won't assign any meaning to it. If you have to come up with your own nonsense words, then you'll be focusing on it. The whole point is to not focus. You want to like kind of go into sort of like a trance. And it kind of works. Like it really does. When I was struggling back when I was 20, and my friend said, hey, you know, this is something I do and I find it really helpful and I think it's really going to help you. You know, I made the appointment. I think he gave me somebody's number and then or email. And I was like, hi, I'm Sarah. I want to learn transcendental meditation. And I had to go to some sort of building that was like a business building and go to like the 25th floor and then go into some random office and talk to this really lovely lady who, you know, kind of explained it to me. And also she made me sign a bunch of stuff, including stuff saying like, I recognize that this is not going to change my life. And like, it's not going to fix everything, and we want you to acknowledge that it's not going to fix everything. And I don't know if this is just for like the purpose of so that you can't sue them when you die from an illness, and I guess you can't sue people when you die, but your family could. Anyways, I'm not sure if it's because you really are not supposed to tell people that you can heal them, or if it's because thinking that a meditation technique will heal you and make your life a lot better then puts a lot of pressure on that technique, and then it's very hard to do it because you're expecting it to change your life. However, I remember when I was in that first sort of like meeting, it's kind of like a timeshare meeting where they're like, we're going to talk to you about this and I'm going to tell you how great it is. And then you can decide if you would like to purchase the lesson. And the lesson, you pay one time and then you have access to a teacher for life. You can go anywhere in the world and you can go into a transcendental meditation center and they'll be like, yep, you are a member. You can, like, come meditate here. Which I guess is cool. And get a couple of hour sessions with a teacher, but the technique is really, really easy, so it doesn't actually take like, not like pole dancing. You got to come back for pole dancing. You got to figure it out. But it's quite easy to figure out transcendental meditation. So I went up to this, you know, 25th floor of this office building in the business district downtown, you know, across the street from a cactus club or something like that. And this woman was like, yeah, it's not going to change your life. And I said, but my friend did say that it would make things better. So is it going to make things better or is it not going to make things better? And she was like, well, it will make things better. But, like, you can't want it to make things better. Like, you have to not expect anything from it. And then it will make things better. And I know this is kind of, like, the thing behind mindfulness, too. Is you don't – it's not about feeling good. You're not, like, trying to, like, reach nirvana. You're just trying to accept things as they are. But I specifically went there to feel better. I absolutely wanted to reach – not nirvana, just like normalcy. And so, you know, I was like, by the time I had gotten into that first meeting, I was like, oh, I want to learn this, obviously. You don't need to give me the whole speech and, you know, make me think about it. I'm like, just, yeah, I'll sign this. I'll sign that. Did I read it? I don't know. I can't remember. And this woman is really compassionate. She gave me the student discount and she gave me a payment plan. But the thing about transcendental meditation is that it costs quite a lot of money. So that's one of the major like red flags that people sort of bring up when they talk about it. I just looked it up and it is listed as a cult on certain – people have lists of world lists of cults – people like Carl Sagan and James Randi actively, you know, they spoke negatively about it. But, you know, that was maybe in the 60s and 70s when it was a big deal and the Beatles were doing it and it was like, you know, changing everybody's life. These days, not very many people talk about it. So I don't know if it's, I don't know. It doesn't 100% seem like a cult to me. However, I don't have the right kind of experience. So if you, human, know about something culty that I don't know about, that would be really interesting and I'd love to hear about it. And so I was so ready to just, yeah, give me the thing. I want to learn the thing. And so she said, this is probably the part I'm not supposed to say. So I'll try and be very vague about what happened in the ceremony where they gave me the mantra. So the mantra, it's like, you get your own specific mantra and it's for you and la la la. You can't say it out loud ever. You can't tell anyone. And I'm pretty sure at this point you can now Google the mantras. And I think they just give one to you depending on how old you are at that time that you learn. So I don't really know if that's, you know, if they're being super honest about, like, we need to find stuff out about you so we can specially choose this mantra for you. Basically, all we need to know is your birthday. But again, like they said, at least what they were saying in 2010 was that it was just total nonsense and it's not going to, you know, bring you anything or, you know, it doesn't mean anything. So they were kind of having it both ways at that point. I'm sure that, you know, when it was big in the 60s, they made all sorts of claims. But at this point, they were not making those claims. They knew better than that. So the person said, okay, please bring a piece of fruit or something like that. And maybe like a cloth, handkerchief, and be ready. And I was like, what the heck is going to happen? Like, what is going to happen? This is so weird. And it was even weirder than I could imagine, because imagine you are in like the office from The Office, like that office in the conference room. And then there's a like a something like a cart that you'd put like a projector on. But instead of a projector, there's a picture of the Beatles guru, Maharishi, Mahesh Yogi, Beatles. But the rest of the room looks like the office from The Office. And then you have to give like offerings to this person, Maharishi, like that you don't know about. Like they didn't really talk about this guy in the meeting. I mean, in the beginning, right? They weren't like, this is all about this dude. You know, they were like, this is what, let's talk about the technique. Let's talk about why it works, science. They're really good at being businessy. And then your teacher starts saying your mantra. Like, they don't say anything. They just start saying your mantra over and over. And they look at you and you're like, oh, I'm supposed to say it? And so then you start saying it, but only after like an awkward amount of time where you've just been like looking at the person being like, what's happening? And then you say it and then they stop saying it. So you stop saying it maybe. I don't know. I think I did. And then the teacher is like, they don't say anything, but they're like clearly like, no, 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 you keep saying it. And then after a while you're saying it and then they say, shh, don't say it anymore, and leave you in the room, and you're just supposed to think about that mantra. And then they come back, and they're like, never say that mantra aloud ever again. That was the only time. You could say it all loud. No, you can't say it out loud, which is kind of, I don't know. It's kind of fun because I guess the idea is like if you say it out loud, then it gives it meaning, and the whole point is that it's supposed to be nonsense. But it feels very weird because remember, this is all happening in the office from the office. So it's definitely a strange thing. But it works like a lot better than a lot of other meditation techniques, at least for me, because there really is something about like not trying at all. Just like say a nonsense word over and over and just, you know, that's it. You don't have to be, you know, saying like breathe in like the sparkles with the word pride, and breathe out like smoke with the word shame, or you know, like all the, you know, there's not all that. It's just sounds. And I definitely was able to go into sort of a trance situation pretty quickly, and that's pretty cool. I mean, it definitely feels relaxing, but also like you say you're 20, you're me, you're like, I don't know. I'm not sure what I believe in. I'm just hoping to feel better. And you totally get that like out of body experience, like you're looking down at yourself or you're floating out of your body and all this stuff. Later, one of my Christian friends, who definitely I want to talk to on this podcast, was like, I know God is real because this is this thing that I felt at this Christian music festival. And I was like, but I felt that doing transcendental meditation. So there. It cost a lot of money. And that was the whole thing. But I didn't feel like I was being cheated out of anything because, you know, the woman was really nice and it actually did work for me. However, I feel like I was able to get some help probably from my mom, because my mom was like, if like, I want to fix you, if there's anything we can do, you know, I will help you. If this is the thing that's going to fix you, I will help you. And so, no, definitely not something I can go and tell everybody to do. And also, I definitely signed a piece of paper where I'm like not supposed to tell people what happened even. So I'm like, how can I? I remember somebody messaged me about it and was like, should I do this? And I'm like, I liked it. Like, I hope you like it, but also like it's really hard when you can't say what it is. And you do know that like not everyone has like a mom who's super worried about like you. Yeah, super worried about you. And so I'm just looking back at what the Wikipedia entry for transcendental meditation was in 2010, and there's stuff about like floating and walking through walls here. I don't know if I ever read this, because that to me, if it was me now and I was looking for a way to relax, and I went to this Wikipedia page and it said this is a meditation technique sourced in India, 1955, taught in the standardized 7-step course over 4 days by certified teachers. And there's an advanced form that is taught to purportedly develop the ability of practitioners to levitate, walk through walls, become invisible at will, among other powers. Like, that's in the first few sentences. I'm pretty sure I would be like, well, no. But I can't really remember what my life was like back then. So it's very possible that I did read that and I was like, cool, I would love to levitate and walk through walls. Sounds fun. And yes, there is a more advanced program that costs more money that you can do where you, I think you just like do a hopping technique. You don't actually levitate. Anyways, as I say in the interview later, I wanted to go continue taking the courses. And the woman who was teaching me was like, no, Sarah, you don't have enough money. And you don't need to do that. It's not necessary. Jumping around is not necessary. Like, you can just do this. Which is why I was like, I don't feel like this is a cult, because the person who taught me this was actively like not upselling me. They were like, this is not necessary. And you are just a young girl who makes minimum wage. So I don't know about the cult stuff. I could see how it could be one, though. You know, there's the signing of the forms. There's the different levels. You know, it's all there. So absolutely, you know, and there's the money. When I was doing some research into it, I saw that, like, David Lynch, the director, he's really into it, and he has a charity where he teaches it to, like, troubled people, children, things like that. And you can learn for free. I think you just have to, like, you have to volunteer for that organization for a bit, which for me was like, oh, that sounds terrible. Like, going somewhere with a bunch of strangers in America. I'm pretty sure you could only do it in America. I was like, I don't know. I can't do that. Might as well do this other thing. Well, might as well, yeah, have the payment plan and all this stuff. But it does exist. There is, like, a charity that will help you. And it is run by David Lynch, the weird director. I really don't know what's going on in, like, you know, the upper echelons of this thing. It's very possible that, like, you know, a lot of people took those NXIVM courses and they just took one and they were like, cool, now I feel confident. You know, they weren't all, like, branded. I'm assuming if you're listening to this that you know about NXIVM. I guess I just wish that this was just something that everybody could do. In fact, it is something that everyone can do. You just, I mean, at this point, you can just Google what are the mantras, and then you could just say it in your head. Is that bad? Am I gonna get sued? I don't think so. Anyways, the Wikipedia page from today does not mention anything about walking through walls or invisibility. It talks about relaxed awareness, stress relief, higher states of consciousness, reducing risk of heart disease. So I don't know if, like, the TM people are, like, more active on Wikipedia than they were, or if they've been promoting that, the weird stuff, less. It could be both. Really, it could be both. And it seems kind of okay. That's what I have to say about it. Anyways, let's talk to Zane. I haven't talked to you in, like, I feel like it's been like 10 years. I don't know if that's true, but it might be.
It's definitely been, probably been like 7 or 8.
Yeah. Yeah.
How are you doing? Okay.
Good? Yeah. Yeah. I'm doing better than I was when I was in my early 20s. So yeah. How are you?
Good. It's been just a, like, ridiculous few years, but yeah,
it's kind of like not an okay thing to ask musician how you are during the pandemic. In a way, it's like we should almost just be like, are you okay?
When did you start this podcast?
2 weeks ago. Yeah, I'm just kind of going through all of the different things that I tried, whether or not they helped or not, in order to like get myself to a place that was stable. And so transcendental meditation is one that really stuck out to me because I felt like it was actually like it could have been a cult, but it wasn't. It was actually pretty helpful. Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Like I had to sign a weird document, but also like it was pretty helpful. So I just wanted to like, and you were one of the main people who introduced it to me, but you had a long history with it before we met. I would love to hear about like where you were when you came to it, like if you even remember, because I know you're super young, and yeah. Like where you are with it now.
Yeah, when you reached out to me, I actually reached out to my mom because he knows more details about. So my dad used to teach it. He learned in 1968 because of the Beatles. Basically, they all learned.
Yeah.
And then he learned to teach. 1972, and he must have taught for about like 30 years because I learned in 2000 when I was five from him. And I think he kind of stopped teaching shortly after that because they had to do some kind of recertification, and it was just became a little more complex and he had a lot of other things going on. But he inspired a lot of people to meditate throughout his life. And cause he'd always kind of, talk about it really openly in his work, with anybody he met basically. But yeah, I kind of didn't really have a choice in learning, you know, it's like in my family.
You're five.
Don't really think about it. You just doing it, and you start with a walking technique when you're five, and then I think I can't remember how old you are when you learn the sitting one. It's either 10 or 15, and I learned that from somebody else, and I don't remember why, but I think it had to do with some tradition. Maybe your family isn't, you know, something they decided the quasi cult kind of decision to maybe not have your dad or your family member be the one to teach you the sitting technique. But I'm so grateful I learned. There was definitely a lot of time in my it's something I've kept up, you know, 26 now, so I've been doing it for like 20 years, which is super weird. Like there's no other practice thing that I do in my life for that long. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely times where I've fallen off a bit more in my teens and just, you know, you're just kind of like, do I really want to be doing this? It's like, don't tell me what to do kind of thing. But I found, especially when I moved out, I needed it a lot more to just kind of cope with everyday existence.
Yeah. You moved out really young because you were working. We were working together at a coffee shop and I just remember you being like so young.
Yeah. Probably 16 or
yeah. 17. Yeah. 16. I think you were.
But that was around the time I stopped. I kind of maybe around 14 or 15, just didn't do it as much. And then when I moved to Vancouver from Vancouver Island at 16, I was like, oh, this is actually really helpful and life's pretty stressful. So,
I don't know if I'm remembering this right, but did you go to a transcendental meditation high school?
I went to a middle school. How old would I have been? This is kind of cool. I haven't thought about this stuff in a while, but it's probably when I was like 6 to 12. Mm-hmm. And it was, yeah, I don't know how this school existed in the small place that I lived. And like, I don't think there's any, like, I don't know if there's any other ones in Canada. We practiced transcendental meditation, I think twice a day. And there's TM is kind of part of Ayurveda, which is like it stands for Science of Life. It's just like a holistic view of health and well-being, which is something I also was very much born into and influenced by. If I wasn't doing music, I would probably be some kind of Ayurvedic doctor or something. It's something I'm really passionate about. And I see a correlation with my dad when I think of it, because I think he learned to teach meditation to, because he saw the value in it in helping people, which is something I feel about Ayurvedic health and just learning these things so you can kind of help people along their journey. But it was interesting because this school would talk about, they would like talk about Ayurveda and these principles of like life and things like they like it was normal, and it was just kind of normalized all these things that aren't really popular in Western culture. So again, really grateful,
Yeah, it's
super
pretty
odd
cool.
experience, kind of smaller, smaller classrooms, and everyone, there's a lot of huge personalities in these schools, and just like, 'cause, think of the people who are raising these, and they're very open, raising these kids, they're very open to things, and maybe they're going to be kind of maybe a bit set in their way. And yeah, it's been great. It's almost, I think it helped me be able to connect with artists, because artists are pretty out there too.
Yeah, they are.
And being around just all these kind of, oddball kids, a lot of them, myself included, but in more of a, in a l more under the surface way.
Yeah. It's so interesting. So you were talking about transcendental meditation and you were talking a bit about Ayurvedic medicine to me. Because you were like, oh, Sarah, like I'm like, I was like, Zane, I'm so sad. I don't know what to do. And you were like, oh, Sarah, I want to help you so bad. Like, you're like, I think this could be good for you. And you were like, oh, it's kind of expensive, but you can like, there's different ways to get
Yeah.
where you can like volunteer, or you can get like a student discount or stuff like that. And so I think the weirdest thing for me was that people didn't really tell me what it was, though. You're
Yeah.
like, you just have to go. You just have to go, and it will be great.
Oh
And
my God, that's so
yeah. And like, I remember even like getting a book about it in out of the library. And
Yeah.
the whole book was filled with like scientific evidence that it worked, but still it never said what it was. But I remember it
Yeah.
had a foreword from Dr. Oz. And I guess at this point I was like, Dr. Oz knows what's going on. So I was like,
Yeah.
well, that's probably fine. I mean, Dr. Oz is a brain surgeon. He's like, he knows his shit. So whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that it was really strange in that way that there was like a lot of secrecy around it in a way. How do you feel about that?
Feel a lot of things about it. It's just yeah, my mom, my mom's side, a few people on her side learned TM like around the same time, 70s, early 70s, and have kept up with it, and it's a big part of like the identity, I guess. And it's interesting like how your parents, they might want to teach you something, but it's like almost how they are can teach you the exact opposite. Because it's being around, like understand I'm very grateful for my upbringing and everything, but it's being around kind of TM and a lot of spirituality and, quote unquote, spiritual people my whole life, has made me very, it's not cynical, but it's more like I'm not very religious. And it's really interesting because so many spiritual thinkers and people are like, oh, they crap on religion, or You know, they're like ideologies that they don't agree with or ways that people are living. And I'm like, but you're doing the exact same thing when you do that. It's just, you know, it's like, no, we're right, actually. Our experience is the experience to have. And when you're not having it, you're arrogant or you're not focused on evolution, spirit, you know, your highest good. Like, I don't believe in that in any stretch of the imagination. I think if you're learning a spiritual practice, it's like a way of dominating the situation or feeling more in control, which is ironic because the whole point of this is to that is to be at ease with life and not, you know, letting go and just embracing who you are. And I think I've just heard so much talk in my life spiritual ways to be, and like I'm not talking about family, I'm talking about, you know, people you come across all the time who wear this spirituality like a badge. And it's like I'm at the point where where talk doesn't mean anything to me. It's like you have to embody what you believe or else I don't care. It's the whole thing with Tien, like it's silence. We're all equal in this space. It's very ironic to me. It's full of irony. So in terms of like secrecy around it, like I understand. I'm really glad I learned. But I don't think it's all that. Like it just is what it is. It's been around forever and ever. It'll continue being around. People will continue learning it, or they won't.
When I went to music school, I met this woman who was like, "Yeah, I learned TM. I just kind of like throw it into my meditation practice sometimes, and sometimes I don't do it." And I was like, "Whoa." Like, you're so
Hopefully.
chill about it.
I'm kind of getting there too after all, you know, over 20 years of being like, oh, if I don't do this, I'm doing something wrong. I'm not serving myself in the best way I can, which is just no, like you don't know what's best for us. You have to try stuff.
Totally. Yeah, and like I found it to be pretty helpful, but I think some of the things of like doing it for 20 minutes twice a day was like I just couldn't keep it up, and so then I just stopped doing it altogether. However, I want to say that the people who were my te I had a teacher, and then one moved to Toronto, I had another teacher, and they were both like so cool about it, and they were like, "Sarah, like no, go get your medication. Go like create a foundation first." Like they were not like some of the other people I've run into in spiritual spaces where they're like, "Medication sucks and like you need to do this instead." They were like, "You can't do it for 20 minutes twice a day. Like you should That's okay. It just means that something else is going on and you need to like yeah, which I was super grateful for. And at the time, I always like I think about this because I'm like I wanted to join a cult really badly because I wanted answers.
Right.
And they were like, we don't really we don't really have answers." I remember this is something that I said to you one time. I was just like, I just want to go to a place where it's like everybody's doing transcendental meditation like every day, and they just like we all do it together. And you were like, "That sounds like a nightmare." You're like, "I don't know if that would be good or if you'd just be surrounded by crazy people." And I was like, "Oh, if Zane doesn't think that's a good idea, then maybe it's not a good idea."
That's really funny that I felt that way,
Yeah,
even
you're
though,
like,
you know,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's really nice to hear that because I think that's maybe becoming more regular, you know, just people kind of like, you know what? Life is not ever ideal, you know, and it's like whatever you can do, you know, if you have a practice and you can give it this much or not, or like it doesn't, it's like maybe some other things need to come first, or maybe it's not for you, you know, and it's like you can arrive at that or have it in your back pocket for every so often when you really feel like you want to go to that place. But I found it incredibly helpful. I still practice it like every day.
It can be like a good thing, and then also like some people involved can be kind of weird and not awesome. You know, like so one thing that I don't know if this is so I went to this weird, okay. I wanted there to be like a youth group, and so they're like, sure, we have a youth group. Come to this house for dinner. And I later learned that it was just a dinner party of friends, and they let me join. But
You had to do,
they
yeah.
and they to do tea. So I think the reason why is they had a teacher come, and like there were a bunch of friends learned it together, and that they had a teacher come, and then they're like, well, we'll let you have a teacher come for free, but it has to be an official TM event. And so then this girl, Sarah, is going to come to your thing too. And I was like 20, and they were all like in their 30s. I'm like, okay, cool. But the guy who was the teacher learned it from Maharishi. Like he was at the place.
Yeah.
And he told me something that I then noticed, which is that like he made them all cut their hair and wear nice suits. And he's like, we're not hippies. Like, we're not going to be those hippies that are like freaking people out. Like, we want to be taken seriously and like look like we're doing well and like stuff like that. And I think that's a really interesting idea, especially in the 60s when people were like, hippies are terrible. But then I think I saw that kind of backfire in a
Right.
certain way when I think one of my instructors, I remember her like being dressed head to toe in like this beautiful outfit with heels. And she was riding her bike and she got really injured. And I was like, why are you riding your bike in heels? And she's like, I have to. She was like, I have to look like everything is great. And I could tell that like things were not super awesome for her and that she was kind of putting something on. And then she moved. So, you know, I don't know, but I wasn't really sure about like the actual organization when you got to be a teacher and stuff like that, like how
Right.
that was going down, you know?
Yeah, I think I don't really agree. I don't agree with the price of it. I think it should be free, or I mean, but the thing is, money has to come from somewhere, and people do make their livelihood from this. So it's like, I don't know. It's a line, because it's if it was cheaper, I would have gotten so many more of my friends to learn by
Oh,
now.
yeah,
And it would
totally.
be impacting them, and it would be, you know, they'd be telling people about it or not, might not be right for them, but at least they'd want to try it. But when you're like, hey, I do this thing that like helps me my quality of life quite a bit, but it's like $1,200, you know, it might not work for you, or you know, you might think it's BS. It's a harder sell. And I think Maharishi, when he, I don't know too much of his story, but he, when he came to America and started just teaching everybody, it was free for a long time. And I think I heard the argument was like, if we give this value, people will respect it more. They won't just kind of learn this thing where they're like, eh, whatever, I don't want to do that anymore. Which there is truth to that, but I also don't know if it's that, you know.
Yeah,
It
it has to
to
be
me it's
that
kind of
expensive. Yeah.
yeah. To me, it's kind of priceless. Like, it's a very big part of my life, but I would never force it on anybody. I'd never hold someone against it for not agreeing with me on it. It's like we're all our own people.
Yeah, and I wonder, just thinking about like imagining being in Maharishi's shoes, like in the 60s, I feel like there you had more to prove when you were talking about meditation. Now we have like scientific evidence that lots of different forms of meditation can like shape, like strengthen your prefrontal cortex and shrink your amygdala and like all this stuff. So people kind of take it seriously and like would be totally willing to pay for like a meditation retreat or like, you know, all these different things. And you don't have to like dress to the nines to be a teacher and pay, you know, over $1,000 to learn it. But I kind of understand where he would be coming from back then, I guess, to like make it legit. Like we're not like all those other hippies. Like, you
Yeah.
know, I can imagine that being a thing. And this is so like my therapist at the time, when I told her that I was going to like some random basement every Tuesday, she was like, "I'm worried about you," at the time. And I was like, "No, it's totally chill." And like the thing is that I was so ready to like give people all my money to like do everything. And the thing about the people that I met there, they were like, "No, Sarah." So the teacher gave me the student discount, even though I wasn't a student,
Yeah.
and she gave me a payment plan.
Yep.
And the teacher also was like, "So if you sign up for the newsletters, there's like extra retreats you can do, and there's levels and stuff." And she was like, "Don't do that." You know, she was like, "You don't have enough money to do that, and like it's not that important. Like just do this." So like, and she was like a young woman who I feel like really understood what was go or like understood to a point what was going on with me and was like actively trying to get me to not do that stuff. And it's so funny because I think about if it was Scientology, which like I didn't know about that back then either, and I signed a contract on the first day just like I did with TM, I totally could have just gone that other way, which is why I'm like fascinated by things like Scientology, because I'm like, I totally would have done that. But I just happened to like go to the organization where the people were like, we don't want to upsell you that much. Yeah.
It sounds like she respected you, which is awesome. And I don't think that's not a TM thing or a Scientology thing. That's like the person in that situation. Because a lot of people who are like, whether they're TM teachers, quote unquote, or spiritual teachers or thought, people who lead thought or whatever spirituality, they're in a lot of positions where they're meeting people like you at that time, and it's so easy to abuse that trust, and it happens all the time. And you think of like, it's like, why did you climb the ladder of this movement just so you can feel better, like in powerful? It's still a very human issue that is everywhere, and it's in it. So it's just really nice to hear that, that was the case in your experience.
Yeah,
But
for her, yeah, she was really great.
be, yeah, being, I've had my own issues with this being like having been getting so close to people where there's trust there.
Yeah.
And then, you time things, start building up and you're like, wait a second. Oh shit. It can take I think if you need to have all these followers or people kind of like you need disciples in a way, or like this constant encouragement of your own material existence, I find it really ironic that it can be such a big part of like spirituality, and it's so prevalent because there's all these like hard, there's a lot of stories of like cults or movements that started in from this, spiritual place that just totally backfire, and just people opening themselves up to, trust. and not knowing. But it's interesting how, like, because I've been in situations where you have this relationship with somebody that starts from that place, and then it's interesting how far, like, backward we need to get pushed to learn something. Sometimes it's like almost like the most difficult shit is like what we need, like we needed to get pushed that far, really, and it happens over and over again.
Yeah. I don't know if you had experiences like this, like in your early 20s and late teens, but like definitely I spent more, like, collectively more money on other things where they're like, keep coming back and you have to do, and you have to buy this from me and this from me. And like, I think that was because I was so, yeah, like trusting, but I was trusting of literally everybody, like every single human. And then you have to get burned by like a lot of people, you know? And like, I think it has to happen. Yeah, unfortunately, like quite a few times.
Yeah,
because the thing that I always say is like, if somebody tells you they have the answer, and then the alternative is someone who's telling you they don't have the answer, but they have a few things that you can try that might be okay and might work and might not, obviously you want to go with the person who has the answer, especially if you're struggling. And so like that, when you're in that situation, you can give those people a pass so many times because you're like, but you said you have the answer. And there's lots of ways of being like, well, I'm the one messing up too. Like, I felt like, because I wasn't meditating exactly 20 minutes and 20 minutes, that like, if it wasn't working for me, it was my fault, which was really good that I had happened to have that young woman instructor who was like, nope, it's not, but like, it's just so easily could have gone the other way.
Yeah.
If you could, I kind of think I already know the answer to this, but if you could change one thing about transcendental meditation, what would it be?
Just make it really easily accessible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's more of a thing I'd change is more of just like a human nature thing.
Yeah.
Not give, you know, just not making it's just treating it like anything else, just what the basis, like how spirituality is, quote, you know, quote unquote, meant to be. It's like everything is equal in this in this space, so it's like not any bigger than any other thing, not any bigger or better. I think just, and that's what it is to its core. It's people who create that. The cult, it's like the cult of personality of this practice, the importance it gives you,
right?
And that's just more of a human thing.
Yes. If only humans weren't involved and aliens could teach us and be like, this is the thing that makes the most logical sense, you weird humans who have so much ego. Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
that's good to know. Yeah, I agree. I would totally wish that it was, oh my God. My cat just stood on the drum machine and then it fell into the electric guitar. And that's my kitchen. Okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah, I would love it for it to be more accessible and for it not to be illegal to talk about what happens in the sessions. I think that would be great. Because then you could write a book about what happens. And that would be great. Yeah. Okay.
What TM, like, what is just disconnecting you from your ego for a moment.
Yeah.
It's connecting you to the source of create. It's like the creative energy of life, like to God, whatever the hell you want to call it.
Yeah,
You
I
know,
th
like
I
this
find it's like
silence.
it's quite clearing your mind, and I really love that it's like a lot of the things are like focused on. Anyways, it's very effective and like not that hard. That's what I really like about it. It's like not that hard compared to some other things, other types of meditation. Okay, well, it was so lovely to chat with you. And yeah, thanks
yeah, thank
for
you for
being
having
here.
me.
Thank you, Zane, so much for chatting with me about transcendental meditation. We had a big chat about music as well that I'll probably put as a bonus episode sometime about how the music industry is a little culty. But thanks for telling me about your experiences. And again, if anyone has had different experiences, I would also love to hear from you. You know, just message me on Instagram. It's at Sarah Jickling, Sarah.Jickling. Jickling rhymes with tickling and pickling. There is someone who has at Sarah Jickling, and they only have like a picture of a pizza, and they haven't posted since 2014. So, Sarah, come on. But yes, that's my Instagram, and you can find me basically if you type my name in. Most places. That's where you'll find me. And yeah, I'm for some reason I'm really distracted by this text message I got. I'm so sorry, friends. But please subscribe. Yes. And tell me what you want to hear about. I have lots of really exciting ideas. Oh yes. Also, as I mentioned Ayurveda, absolutely, I'm going to talk about Ayurveda, and I have a friend in mind who is not totally white to talk to you about it. I just felt like maybe we should get some perspective from someone who's actually from India. Yeah, message me. Yeah, I really get very thrown off. I'm very thrown off by that text message. So hopefully I won't have like a bunch more mental breakdowns, and I'll be able to release the next episode pretty soon. If not, you'll hear from me when you hear from me. All right? All right. See ya.
Making bad choices.